Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Finals!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports, right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Happy to be back live in the studio. Yesterday with Labor Day, we had a best of edition of Drive Time Sports, so now we can get back to the latest happenings in both the local and national sports scene. Hopefully you enjoyed the long weekend. I know I definitely did. I enjoyed college football on a Monday night. I like that. I like that we had college football Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. We had 5 days of college football. And the latest AP poll, it is out, and there was minimal change, but there was a change within the top 10. To no surprise, Clemson comes out. They are number one once again. Alabama remains number one. Clemson got 54 out of the possible 62 AP top 25 votes. Alabama gets 8. Georgia comes in at 3. Oklahoma 4. I thought Oklahoma was somewhat impressive. Jalen Hurts looked the part of another Heisman contender for Oklahoma. And I'm just going to say this now. I don't think he wins the Heisman because Heisman voters are weird. Heisman voters are strange in which several refuse to vote for certain stories. You know, throw out who the best college football player is. They refuse to vote for certain stories. I remember for years, voters refused to vote to give their nod to freshman quarterbacks. They refused to vote for defensive players. I mean, there's all these little nuances that some of the older voters have. Jalen Hurts won't win the Heisman, but he's going to be a finalist. He had the makings of a Heisman. He set Oklahoma records in that debut, and they just trounced Houston. So Oklahoma comes in at number 4, Ohio State 5, LSU 6, Michigan 7. No change there, but Notre Dame does move up one spot to number 8. Texas moves up a spot to number 9. Auburn jumps up 6 spots after topping Oregon, and Florida drops from 8 to 11. And I like that Florida's outside of the top 10. Because I wasn't sold on this team being a top 10 team to begin with. I thought they were a little overrated. And really, slipping 3 spots after, that's minimal compared to what could have happened. Because Miami should have won that football game. Outside of that, Texas A&M stays at 12. Utah moves up to 13. They jump a couple of spots as Oregon moves back. So Utah climbing over the top of Oregon. Washington is 14. Penn State 15. Oregon, again, 16, Wisconsin, 17, Central Florida, 18, Michigan State, 19, Iowa comes in at 20, and then 21 through 25, Syracuse, Washington State, Stanford, Boise State climbs in after they top Florida State, and then Nebraska and Iowa State receive the same amount of points, tied at 25. How about that Boise State game? They come back to top Florida State. It's a big, solid victory. And again, if you're a Group of 5 school, those are the games that you have to have. That win helps out Central Florida. Regardless of what anyone says, that Boise State victory helps out Central Florida. Anytime a Group of 5 can score a victory over a Power 5, I don't care how bad that Power 5 is, Florida State is nationally known. It's a solid win for Boise State. And I'm not going to call it an excuse, but Willie Taggart, who's the head coach of Florida, says that he wasn't sure if his players were properly hydrated. Said this on his weekly radio show today. He said he spoke with the Florida State medical staff about better hydration after seeing several players cramp up in the game. It kind of sounds like an excuse to me. Florida State was up 31-13. And then Boise State scored the game's final 23 points to pick up a 36-31 win. But there were some really stupid plays in this contest for Florida State. Boise State ran 106 plays in the game, which is 46 more than Florida State, which had possession for only 20 minutes of the contest. I just believe that Willie Taggart and Florida State were outcoached in this game, and they made stupid plays down the stretch. It's a solid win for Boise State. I did kind of chuckle. Look, Boise State was out there as well, right? So if your players aren't properly hydrated, that kind of falls on Willie Taggart, right? He's ahead of that football program. So nonetheless, Florida State picks up a bad loss. It's a solid win for Boise State, and they climb into the top 25, and rightfully so, following that victory over Florida State. Now let's move over to the NFL. The Dallas Cowboys are extremely close to finalizing a deal with Ezekiel Elliott, and I would assume Zeke is going to be the second highest paid running back in the NFL. In fact, Ed Werder of ESPN says he expects an agreement relatively soon. Doesn't look like Zeke would miss any time. And I kind of thought this would come to fruition because Jason Garrett made the comment over the weekend that there was no timeline on when Zeke needed to sign the deal to be available for Sunday's opener. Okay, so that right there told me that deal is going to get done this week at some point in time, and Zeke will play on Sunday. The Cowboys also signed right tackle Lyle Collins to a 5-year contract extension, and this created 5.7 in cap space for the team this year. That's how you get a deal done with Ezekiel Elliott. So the Cowboys are moving towards shoring up their biggest headline throughout the offseason. The Chargers, on the flip side, not so lucky. But the Cowboys are inching closer and closer to getting a deal done. Let's take a look at what's happening in the national sports front. We'll look at the scoreboard. Plenty of day baseball games coming up. When I say day baseball, I mean baseball before 5 p.m. The Texas Rangers will battle the New York Yankees at 5:35 tonight. The Yankees, they have 90. They were the first to 90 wins, 90-49 right now, one better than the Dodgers, who are at 90-50. That's amazing. And there's a statistic that we have to talk about on the show today because we are going to talk Major League Baseball. The Yankees were shut out for the first time over the weekend in 220 games. Think about that. They have not been shut out since June of 2018. Finally happened over the weekend. I was unaware of this. Now, we knew that the Yankees have not won many games when they've scored two or less runs. I was aware of that statistic. But the fact that they went 220 games without being shut out, it's astonishing. I know one of the most overused words in sports is incredible, but that's incredible. 220 games. You only have a 162-game season. Now, they didn't go throughout the entire season without getting shut out, but they nearly did. We're in September. It's an amazing statistic. 4:40 tonight, we get the Phillies and the Reds. The Phillies right now battling for their playoff lives as we get down to the final 20 or so games of the season. The Orioles and the Rays, they'll do battle tonight at 4:40 as well. 5:05, we get the Mets and the Nationals. Big contest with an excellent pitching matchup. Jacob deGrom will go toe-to-toe with Max Scherzer. 5:05, we get the Marlins and the Pirates. The White Sox will battle the Indians as well. It's an important game for the Indians right now as they're trying to hold on to a playoff spot. Loss-wise, the Indians, the A's, and the Rays all with 58 losses, but the Indians and Rays have more wins than the A's right now. So big contest tonight, Indians and the White Sox. The Twins will battle the Red Sox at 5:10. We get the Blue Jays and the Braves at 5:20. The Astros take on the Brewers at 5:40. 5:45 tonight, it's the Giants and the Cardinals. The Cardinals still atop of the Central Division with 77 wins. 6:05 tonight, the Mariners battle the Cubbies. The Cubs right now in control of their playoff destiny. John Lester will take the mound against King Felix tonight. 6:05 start time there. Felix Hernandez, we can't call him King Felix anymore. Felix Hernandez, 1-4 with a 6 ERA. Just not the same guy. 6:15 tonight, we get the Tigers and the Royals. 7:40, the Padres will battle the Diamondbacks. And in the 8 o'clock hour, we get the Angels and A's. Huge contest there. Dodgers and the Rockies at 8:10. That's the nightcap. It's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports front. It's a beautiful week. NFL preseason is over. The first AP rankings following the preseason rankings are out. And we're down to about 20 games left of the Major League Baseball season. Coming up on the show today, you're going to hear from Coach Ammon Bennett of the USU Eastern Lady Eagles. They are a perfect 4-0, have not given up a single goal so far this year. We'll talk to Coach Bennett about that and what the outlook is for this team in the coming weeks. Also, we'll talk Major League Baseball with our great friend Bill Lasky. Typically, Bill joins us every Monday due to Labor Day. Move that segment back a day. Baseball talk coming up. It's Drive Time Sports here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. And we are live from the Auto Farm Studios. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And we will begin with cross country, where today Emory will play host to Carbon and a number of other schools in just the third cross country competition of the year. Now, today will be the beginning of a very busy week for both schools. Following today's competition, Carbon and Emory will then travel to Murray for the Murray Invite that will take place on Friday afternoon. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We will have more, including the results from today's cross-country meet, as soon as they become available. Next, we move over to soccer, and today the Emory Lady Spartans will open up Region 12 action with a road contest against the Grand Red Devils. Emory enters today's contest with a record of 1-5 so far this season. Most recently, Emory suffered a 2-1 setback at the hands of the Millard Eagles. Now, while today's contest begins region action, Emory will return to the soccer field on Thursday with another road contest, this time against South Sevier. All soccer games are scheduled to begin at 4 p.m. for Emory, unless otherwise noted. You can get the complete weekly schedule for Emory High School Athletics by visiting CastleCountryRadio.com. Also in action today, the Carbon Lady Dino soccer team will play host to the South Sevier Rams. Today will mark the Region 12 opener for Carbon. The Lady Dinos played brilliantly during the non-region portion of the season. Sitting with a record of 4-1, Carbon scored 9 goals in back-to-back games during the non-region portion of the schedule. They defeated Gunnison Valley 9-1 and then South Summit 9-2. Other wins included a 2-1 victory over Union and a 4-1 win over American Leadership Academy. Following today's home game against South Sevier, Carbon will then take the field on Thursday in another home contest. This will be against San Juan. After starting region play with 2 home games this week, Carbon will travel on the road next week to meet both Richfield and Grand. We next move to junior college athletics, and the USU Eastern women's volleyball team continued to roll yesterday on Labor Day by picking up 2 victories in Thatcher, Arizona. The Lady Eagles dominated both Eastern Arizona and Pima Community College, winning both games in straight sets. The domination has been a reoccurring theme for the Lady Volleyball squad. They are now 10-2 overall during non-region play, and over the weekend they scored victories over 3 ranked opponents. Now the season will continue this weekend for the Lady Eagles. They will next travel to Twin Falls, Idaho, where they will play in 4 games in 2 days, both Friday and Saturday. Following this weekend, next weekend they will travel to Colorado. After that, another tournament, this time in Nebraska, and that'll set the stage for the beginning of conference play, which will take place September 26th against Salt Lake Community College. Speaking of USU Eastern Athletics, today we will talk women's soccer on KOAL's Drive Time Sports. The Lady Eagles have gotten off to a hot start, winning all 4 games so far in their preseason without allowing a single goal. Today on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, head coach Ammon Bennett will be a guest. He'll talk about the previous weekend in which the Lady Eagles scored not 1, but 2 wins. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAO, 107.3 FM and 750 AM. We're going to talk local soccer here for just a moment. The JUCO season is off and rolling. The Lady Eagles have gotten off to a terrific start. 4-0 so far this season. Have yet to play a home game. 2 on the road, 2 at a neutral site. And joining us right now to talk about the latest road trip, we have head coach Ammon Bennett right now over the phone. Coach, always a pleasure. Thank you again for the time.
You bet. Thanks for calling.
Coach, it's never an easy road trip anytime you go to Henderson, especially at this time. You got to deal with intense heat, yet that was not a problem for the soccer program at all. You guys pick up a 5-0 win over Arizona Western, and you follow that up with a 2-0 win over Allen Hancock. So all in all, 2 wins, 2 games. You guys are now sitting 4-0. How would you assess the way the girls played over the weekend?
When they played Arizona Western, really played well. Arizona Western, extremely fast team, athletic team, but they ended up being kind of predictable in their attack. And we watched some film, and we're really nervous going into the game. We had to change strategy on typically how we might play because it was 110 degrees. So we literally were subbing 6, 7, 8 players at a time, just because we didn't want to have any type of problems with the heat. But it worked. We just were able to be very, very smart defensively and, ended up 3-0 at halftime, 2-0, another 2 goals in the second half, and really played a complete game. Every kid on the roster, we had 27 kids down there. Every one of them got some minutes in the game. Had a day off, played Allen Hancock. Same thing, very hot weather. Didn't play so good in the first half, 0-0. Second half, we changed some thought, did some things, and then really controlled the game after that, ended up winning 2-0. So, yeah, the temperature, all everything on the road, none of that's ever in your favor. You're sleeping in a hotel bed, probably got a teammate with you, and you don't sleep well typically, and it's just harder. Everything's been on the road. All of our games have been on the road so far, and that makes it hard. It doesn't put things in your favor, but we've been able to manage it. Work on some things, improve in some areas, and manage to win those games, which is a good thing.
Hey, Coach, in 4 games so far this year, you guys have yet to give up a goal. And I that's impressive, all things considered. I mean, first off, you haven't allowed anyone to score on you. But with that being said, the regular season comes so fast. I mean, we had the blue and white scrimmage. I know there were a couple of other scrimmage games with Western Wyoming and Treasure Valley, and that kind of got the team ready. But in 4 games, you guys have yet to give up a goal. What has worked defensively throughout the first 4 games of the season?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't know that we've been as organized as a group as we could be, but we've had some really good individuals who have defended well individually, and I think as we continue to play, hopefully that'll get even tighter. There's been a few times where some teams probably should have scored on us, and maybe they missed a shot or the goalkeeper's made a fantastic save. Well, that's kind of overall the whole thing with us. We have pretty good defenders that are smart. They're aggressive. We have a good goalkeeper. All those things combine to help with the shutouts. I'll be honest with you, not putting a lot of stock in that right now. It's a kind of a pride thing for them. Eventually we're going to get scored on. That's just going to happen. We expected that we were going to give up a goal or two last weekend, and it didn't happen, but it's a lot of individual effort right now that's coming together as a group, and so we still think we can be even stronger defensively once we get more on the same page with all the players.
I know for someone who maybe doesn't quite understand the sport, Coach, you'd look at 4 shutouts and you'd say, okay, things are working right now with whoever you have at goalkeeper. And I know you have a couple of freshmen at goalie, but it goes well beyond that. I mean, it is a team effort anytime you pitch a shutout.
Yeah, sure. I mean, there were moments in every one of those games where the other team had opportunities and maybe could have scored, but a central midfielder who's normally an attacking player, gets back and covers somebody defensively or an outside back, really defends somebody 1v1, or we get a leg out to deflect the ball right at the right time. We defended well on some corner kicks. But, yeah, absolutely, it's 11 players out there trying to do their job the best they can to prevent those opportunities. We've been able to limit opportunities, and that's what you want. Teams are going to get opportunities, but if they have too many, now the numbers aren't in your favor. They're going to score on you eventually. So we've been able to limit what teams have done, and we still have some better organization that we can put together with a group. And so we think we can continue that, or at least continue to be competitive in that respect.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Ammon Bennett of the USU Eastern Lady Eagles soccer squad. Coach, let's talk about what you guys have managed to do offensively so far this year, averaging a little over 2 goals per game. You guys have been pretty crisp, but one of the things that stands out to me, Coach, only one player on this team, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, only one player has scored multiple goals so far this season.
Yeah, and oddly enough, that's a defender. Kinley McMillan has 2 goals. And they were both off of set pieces. The first one was literally 60 yards from the goal. Had a little bit of a tailwind, sent a long ball into the goal, and it bounced in front of the keeper, who kind of misjudged it and went into the goal. And then she scored another goal from about 40 yards out that was directly into the goal. She got a super strong leg. But, yeah, it's been pretty balanced. We've got 2 or 3 kids, I think, that have more than one assist. But... there's 8 different goal scorers of the 19 goals that we've scored. So that's a good thing to be balanced. So it can make teams either ignore players or get scared and try to defend too much, and then that's an advantage for the attacking team.
Coach, speaking of getting set for teams that will definitely be attacking, we have only one more contest before conference play gets off and rolling. That one more game will send you guys back to Henderson, Nevada this weekend, Friday, for a contest with Otero. After that, it's conference play time. So what are some things that you're looking for in this final non-conference game on Friday?
Well, we talked about it. You know, tightening some things up from a shape-wise, team-wise, defensively. Having a little bit more attitude when we don't have the ball, wanting to get that ball back, you know, pressing as a team just a little bit better. We know Otero is going to be a good quality team. I think they only have 1 loss in the year right now. They lost to a good Indian Hills team out of Iowa that I think is getting some votes for ranking. So we've got to try to tighten some things up there, be a little bit more aggressive, have a little bit better thought offensively, because we know going into that game against Salt Lake, they're a really good team. There's been one crossover kind of game. You know, we played Arizona Western, beat them. They played Paradise Valley and beat them. Well, Paradise Valley and Arizona Western played each other to a tie. So we think that we're going to be very competitive in that Salt Lake game, but it's a whole new animal when you're playing a conference team that just knows you. They know what you're going to do. They prepare for you. But we want to just tighten some things up in the last non-conference game before we see Salt Lake.
Now, I don't want to get too far ahead, Coach, but in just looking at the schedule, once we get past Friday's contest with Otero, it's 3 straight road games to start off conference play, and then there's a stretch of 5 consecutive home games. Now, I know with junior college athletics, there is so much traveling, and you had mentioned earlier that, you know, you go on the road, you're sharing a hotel room. Typically, these athletes may even have to share a bed with one another. I mean, JUCO, life on the road for a JUCO athlete is not glamorous, to say the least. So with that being said, I mean, that stretch of 5 home games is pretty crucial if you guys can get off to a start where you win 2 of 3 on the road to start off conference play.
Yeah, you know, and we've looked at that. You know, these first non-conference games were all on the road, and I thought to myself, you know, if we end up 3-2, 4-1, I'll feel pretty good about it, you know. And, you know, we still might be 4-1, but I think we have a good chance to finish our non-conference schedule at 5-0 and have a lot of momentum, a lot of confidence going. You're right. You know, we played at Gillette and Sheridan early in the year, 1-0 games. They were both good teams, good, solid teams. But nothing's in your favor on the road. Again, you drive 10 hours, you sleep in a bed with somebody else. It's not your bed. You're anxious, you're nervous, you know, and you go out there the next day and try to play. And so oftentimes things you've worked on kind of go out the window when they haven't been ingrained in you long enough. So, yeah, you know, we go on those three conference games on the road, you know, Salt Lake, then Truckee Meadows, then up to Craig, Colorado. There's a scenario, again, we look at it as, boy, if we get through those stretch of games and we're sitting good and we win good, then those next five, now we have the advantage. So things could pan out really, really well for us. But again, we still haven't played those games yet. They're not there yet. You know, our focus right now is taking care of Otero and then trying to make the right adjustments for a road game to Salt Lake.
Sure.
But there's a scenario there, and we absolutely, coaches talk about it. We don't necessarily share this with the players, but we talk about it and we know the scenario and that we could be in really good shape after those first three conference games on the road to go through with five in a row at home, and now you could potentially be sitting at top of the league and having a chance to maybe host a conference tournament, which would be good.
Yeah, hopefully the individuals on this year's team know how fortunate they are to have a stretch where they get to play five home games in a row. Coach, go back 4 years ago, those kids would have given anything for just back-to-back home games. I think it speaks volumes to where we're at as a program at this stage.
Oh, yeah. Our first year, I think we played one or two home games. We had 17 games, so 15 on the road.
Yeah.
We were probably 50-50 as far as home and away, but not a stretch where there was five in a row like that, maybe two or three in a row. So we're in a good spot this year with things, and we're coming together. We still have a long way to go, but we're in a good spot. I think the players feel good about themselves, but we still have to, like I said earlier, kind of tighten some things up.
Well, Coach, it is always a pleasure to get you on and talk about the program. Congratulations on winning the first four games of the season, and I know we'll talk again real soon, especially before conference play kicks up.
You bet. Thanks.
Again, that's Coach Ammon Bennett of the USU Eastern Soccer Squad talking about the hot start to the 2019 season for the team. We're going to break for just a moment. When we return, we'll move over to talk Major League Baseball. We typically save that for Monday, but it's Tuesday/Monday. Yesterday kind of throws things off. We'll get back on schedule next segment. Bill Lasky, former Major League Baseball pitcher, will join us when we return.
Pitch to Bellinger. He swings and he hits a high fly ball right center field. This ball's gone!
Now a 3-1 for Acuna. Swinging a high fly ball! Deep to left field! Way, way back! It's gone!
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Now, we typically talk Major League Baseball on Monday. We're going to do it today with our great friend Bill Lasky. Again, who was a former Major League pitcher, spent his time with the San Francisco Giants, now works as an analyst with the Giants, and also as an analyst for the Sacramento River Cats. And, of course, those who follow AAA Baseball know the season is rapidly coming to a close. Bill is joining us right now over the phone, and Bill, as always, I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Oh, no problem whatsoever. Another week of baseball over. Labor Day is now counting days to the end of the year. A little over 20 games left on the season for most teams. And, you know, the strong are getting stronger, no doubt about it. The home run ball is flying out of the ballpark bigger than ever. And we're just going to see how these wild card teams come to fashion here as the last couple weeks the season ends.
It's an interesting time. It really is. And before we dig into the meat and bones of where we're looking at as far as the playoffs go, Bill, you and I had a conversation, a brief one off of the air, that I think it's a great place to start. Johnny Cueto, it's a name that I know every listener out there will remember. They haven't heard from Cueto in quite some time. He's trying to recover from Tommy John surgery. You actually had the opportunity to see him pitch this past weekend. Looked great. Now he's back in the rotation for the Giants this weekend. And it's just amazing to me of how far we have come with Tommy John surgery. I mean, 10, 11 years ago, it literally was a death sentence for careers if you had to undergo Tommy John surgery as a pitcher.
100%, and I'm right there with you. I'm just amazed that Johnny Cueto, A year ago had Tommy John. Of course, everybody knows that's the ulcer nerve in your elbow is repaired by another nerve in your leg, and they substitute the nerve, and then it has to grow and adapt to the hand and the process of your arm, and it takes over a year to make this happen, and it took him less than a year. He made six starts. He had two in rookie ball, two in A ball, and then he had two in Sacramento, the second one being the last one this past Saturday, and he threw about 65 pitches, 47 of them were strikes, limited the damage only to four singles, struck out six, no walks. High velocity, 92, 90 right in there, pinpoint control, 86-mile-an-hour slider and cutter, 84-mile-an-hour curveball, and he had a changeup that was about 80, 81, six shutout innings against El Paso. And the Chihuahuas ended up with 80 wins and never made the playoffs. Las Vegas beat them out a couple games. But a team that's pretty good. Their batting average was pretty high. And they made contact, but nothing loud. And he made a nice turn on a double play. He's lost about 20 to 25 pounds. So when people see him, he's a lot lighter. He's quicker, more shimmy shake. But at the same time, the Giants can't be thrilled. You know, he's going to get a start most likely in L.A. this next weekend. They haven't prognosed if it's going to be Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. And he's back in the rotation. And what a plus for the Giants to look for 2021 with Johnny Cueto in the rotation.
Bill, for someone that's around the game so much, and I'm sure you see a lot of this even down in the minor leagues, in today's world, do we prefer to have kids already have undergone Tommy John surgery before they get to the bigs? Because I know that there's actually the question, and studies have indicated that I think something like 85% of players will recover from Tommy John surgery, and about 80% they can throw the ball harder after Tommy John surgery. So in the scout's mind, when you're hanging around these big league ball clubs, is that something that they would prefer an 18, 19, 20-year-old kid to have already have had this operation?
You know, when guys are trying to, kids, I should say, like you say, in high school, college, when they're trying to throw in the high 90s at that young of age, it's way too fast. But they love to see the jugs gun. They love to see the velocity. They want to try to overthrow everything. But what it's doing is damaging the arm and really tearing up the elbow. And what's happening is you're going into Tommy John. Now, you hear all the positives. You hear some of the stories. Oh, yeah, he's throwing harder. You don't hear the negatives. It doesn't always occur that way. There are a lot of arms that do not come back from Tommy John. Sometimes they don't adapt to the arm. Sometimes the tendon doesn't come back fully repaired. So I don't think that's the answer. Of course, you never want to have surgery on your arm. I just think it's the way that baseball is going now. The high velocity is getting more eyes on him as scouts start looking at him.
Again, we're being joined right now by Bill Lasky, former Major League Baseball pitcher. As we talk Major League Baseball, Bill, let's step aside from the Tommy John talk, but we can still talk about pitching. In the National League wild card, things are starting to become a little bit more clear. I'm going to go out on a limb and say, okay, we're going to get the Nationals and the Cubs, barring some sort of drastic change over the final 20 games. And I'm okay with that first-round matchup. I like it an awful lot, actually, the Nationals and the Cubs. You want to give me that for a one-game playoff? I'm on board.
I think that's probably what's going to happen. Milwaukee is kind of falling off. Arizona's staying hot. They still have a chance. They're probably the hottest team in the National League right now. And my Giants have just faltered. They've lost 6 out of 7. And it looks like they're going through St. Louis and Los Angeles, which pretty much is going to eliminate them. Other than that, I think you're right. I think Washington's definitely a staple right in there, and Chicago will probably fit in. St. Louis has just been playing really good baseball since the break, halfway point. Their pitching is starting to come into tack, and their starters, Wainwright, threw a hell of a game yesterday. They just have a solid team, and Goldschmidt's almost 30 home runs, so I think the Cardinals can pretty much take that division, and I think we're right. I think both of us agree, Nationals and Cubs in the wild card.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a very interesting matchup as well when you take a look at what the Nationals have from their pitching rotation. I mean, do you want to throw Strasburg? Do you want to throw Corbin? You can look at the Cubs. Do you want to go Hamels? Do you want to go Lester? Yu Darvish has actually really turned it around as of late. I think that's a story, Bill, that nobody is really talking about. Darvish was so bad for so long. He's finally figuring things out, it seems like, and that's helped the Cubs tremendously.
It sure has. And, you know, you start looking at some of their offense. Contreras is coming back today, and you got guys coming back. Zobrist is coming back. So some veteran players that could easily help them. And you just see what kind of scoring opportunities they're going to have. And then you look at the Nationals, and you can't look at that starting rotation without looking Scherzer at that number one spot going at you in that wild card position. So both those teams, I think, will probably fall in that wild card spot.
And as you bring up Scherzer, I can't believe I did not mention Scherzer. But by looking at both rotations, these are two teams that are equipped to pitch in a one-game playoff. I mean, they have a solid... I mean, if Patrick Corbin is your number one or your number two, you're okay. I mean, he's viable there. Same thing with Strasburg. If I look at the Cubs, the same situation. Bill, these are two teams that I don't think will necessarily be massively affected by a one-game playoff.
I agree. I think it's going to be a good game for sure, a one-timer. And then the winner of that plays the Dodgers, and I think either one of those teams can give them a battle. We're looking at Kenley Jansen, who's really struggling right now, and they don't know what they're going to do in the closer position, even though they're scoring runs. Unbelievable game yesterday against Colorado, 16-9, 11 home runs and 11 doubles in that game. Balls are just flying out of the ballpark. There's so many players on the Dodgers that now have 30 home runs, 20 home runs. Seems like an average now, but I agree with you. I just think both those teams in a one game, you might see a couple starters, you know, following each other up to try to win that game.
Yeah, Bill, you mentioned the Dodgers and the amount of runs that they scored. And here's an interesting fact. The Colorado Rockies are now the first team in Major League Baseball history where a game has begun with a home run in five consecutive games. Doesn't matter if they hit it or they gave it up. In five consecutive games, a Rockies contest has begun with a home run. Then on the flip side, you take a look at the New York Yankees. They were shut out for the first time in 220 games. I mean, it's unbelievable, the offense that we're talking about. But it seems like it could be a dead-end street for the Dodgers. You can't rely on scoring 10, 11 runs once you get to the postseason. You will not have success if you do.
You're absolutely right. And you're talking about the Yankees being shut out. They hit 74 home runs in the month of August, the most ever by any team in Major League Baseball. 58 was a record. And then you start thinking about how many guys hit 20 home runs. Close to 90 players already have hit 20 home runs or more. And there's been a dozen or more that have hit 30 home runs. So the home run ball has definitely taken over. And like you're talking about the Rockies, look at the Dodgers lineup. You know, you're talking about Bellinger with 44 home runs already. It's just remarkable. And, of course, when you get into these playoff games, I really want to know if this ball is going to take place with a fly ball that's going to get out of the ballpark. I hope not. I hope the playoffs are going to be a little low scoring. There's going to be good pitching in it. But I still hope I don't see a fly ball one-handed leave the ballpark, because then you know that ball is juiced so much. And we've seen it in the past. We've seen it this year. And it's just not right. But that's the flavor of baseball.
Talk to me about the Yankees. And again, they have not been shut out. They were shut out for the first time in 220 games. We have to go all the way back to June of 2018, the last time this team was shut out. How incredible is that, Bill, when you really sit and think about it?
It's totally incredible. But, you know, we've talked about how good that lineup is and how many home run hitters come up. And I think at one time, every position, 1 through 8, had 20 home runs hit in that position. Now, of course, different names and different slots, but at the same time, that's just remarkable when you start looking at how many years the Yankees have played. And you're talking 220 major league games, and they've been only shut out once. Just phenomenal.
Yeah, it was mind-boggling. In fact, when I came across that, I had to read that like 5 times just to make sure I wasn't missing something. Because I know that as far as their offense goes, they do not have a lot of success when they score 2 runs or less. But I did not know that they had not been shut out since 2018, June of 2018. Bill, we've talked about the National League and the wild card spot there. In the American League, it's still a little bit more up in the air. Now, I'm going to say unfortunately, because I really enjoy watching the Oakland A's play baseball. They've lost 2 straight. They've lost 5 out of their last 10, and because of that, they have now fallen behind both the Rays and the Indians for that wild card spot.
Yeah, they had a tough time in New York. That was the first time Hendricks blew a save in years. I should say years and months, but the key point of that is they had the lead in two of those three games and they lost it. And that's something that Bob Melvin's bullpen has really held on to. I still think they have a shot here. They're coming home. They got a tough schedule here, but I wouldn't put the A's out. Chris Davis has just been struggling this whole second half. A few injuries have just, you know, put him down, and that's the guy they look for in that DH role to kind of lead that team, and he just has not had a good second half. You look at Chapman and Olsen, both those guys are just outstanding defenders, and they're hitting the ball still, but I still think the pitching might be lackadaisical for the A's. I think that's one drawback that they might have. But again, they can score runs in Oakland. They play very well here.
Yeah, and it is important to note that Oakland right now has the same amount of losses as Cleveland and as Tampa Bay. They're just behind in the win column, which means they're going to be playing more baseball down the stretch. And Bill, when you look at the next six games for Oakland, they get the Angels, a three-game set at home, then they get the Tigers, a three-game set there. Let's say they take care of business 5-1. Really, their playoff hopes could hinge on a four-game set on the road against Houston.
Yeah, it could be, and they play Houston very well. They beat them here 3 out of 4 in their last home stand, and then swept the Yankees, and then they went on that road trip. Of course, that Yankees series, they were really building it here, and they just felt it was a downfall because, they, like I said, they had two wins. They should have won the last two games, and they lost two by winning. But I don't take them out. Bob Melvin's a strong manager. He's not going to let that team go backwards. I still think they have a shot. I'm amazed at how Tampa Bay is still holding on. And Cleveland's got a little life in them. Minnesota, of course, is still winning that division. I don't think that division's done yet. It's good American League baseball, and it should be, you know, just as well as the National League with so many teams fighting for the wild card. American League doesn't have a bunch of them, but there's 3 or 4 teams that could bounce in there.
And there's still 8 games on Tampa Bay's schedule where they got to play the Dodgers, the Yankees, and the Red Sox. And again, looking at the A's, they only play one team with a winning record the rest of the year, and that's Houston. So just looking at that, you would say absolutely the schedule would benefit Oakland. And while you and I have really, I think we've been on the same page, kind of shocked that Tampa Bay has hung around as long as they have, it's a tough stretch to close out the season. Then I take a look at the Indians. I know they get 3 games with the Phillies. They have 3 games with the Nationals. So if I'm just looking at schedules, Bill, and being realistic, that does benefit Oakland down the stretch.
It sure does, and you know what? The schedule's been so weird this year. Teams didn't play on Memorial Day. They didn't play on 4th of July. Some teams didn't play on a Friday night, and some teams were even off on Labor Day. So I don't understand Major League Baseball when you're looking at some of the biggest holidays in the summer and Major League Baseball teams aren't playing. I think they dropped the ball on that. Same thing with the nickname weekend with the uniforms all white and all black. I know we touched base on that before. Just some different things that I'm not understanding what MLB's trying to do. But at the same time, I as a pitcher, and I talk about pitching, the home run ball is just too much. I just think way too many home runs, and they need to fix that.
Bill Lasky, again, former Major League pitcher, now an analyst talking San Francisco Giant baseball and also covering the Sacramento River Cats. Bill, please let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
Well, I got a shout-out for the River Cats. They made the playoffs. They won the division. Now they're playing Las Vegas, best of 5, starting tomorrow. And then they play the winner of Iowa and Round Rock. So kudos to the River Cats. Turnaround. They were 30 games under 500 last year, and they turned it around, as well as San Jose Giants and Salem, Oregon, another A-League. Both teams in the Giants organization won their division. So a good turnaround for the Giants organization. You can always catch me at Twitter, at Lasky19. I'm on there shooting some stuff out. And KNBR Radio, we do Saturdays. So you can always check out the podcast on KNBR All Podcasts. But thanks again, my friend. Another good week, and we're getting close to the playoffs, and I can't wait to start talking about October baseball.
Oh, me neither. It's the best time of the year. Bill, again, thank you so much for the time today.
Thanks again, buddy.
Let's break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. We are live from the Auto Farm Studios.